Hey, good morning, gardeners, or welcome back, depending on which way it is. This is Gardening Naturally on a cool weekend. Going to be overcast. It's going to be a good opportunity to go out and work. It's not overheating too much doing the labor. Which, my wife texted me an excellent question. I'm not exactly sure of the answer of this. But let's say you have plant starts. You started seeds indoors. I did. And I happen to have a grow light that has just been amazing as to the growth that I'm getting out of the plants. But, you know, these plants need to acclimate. We're not going to have this narrative where I'm going to keep the tomatoes growing inside until my inside temperatures and outside temperatures are exactly the same. I can't wait that long. Those tomatoes are going to have to go out in weather that's probably cooler than it is in my home. And the tomatoes right now are under grow lights and doing fantastic. But they will still, even with the best grow light, they're still going to get better direct light, meaning sunshine. Now, the question is, today is supposed to be heavily overcast. Is there a benefit in putting plants out in an overcast period of time when it appears they're not going to get any sun? And the answer to that is, probably. It's not just sunshine that plants need to grow. And the thing about it is starting plants by seed in containers, I want the wind to blow over them. Now, if I had started plants, I could set up a little fan so a fan was always blowing against them. My wife walks by them and she gently brushes them with her hand to get them to move and wiggle. This actually promotes root growth and strong stems and strong roots. So it's beneficial to the plant. So if I take them outside, even if it's dark, there's a light breeze, and the breeze is going to work to kind of stimulate the plant to produce those strong roots and stem. So with that in mind, putting the plants out in this kind of weather where there doesn't appear to be any sun is still beneficial to the plants. Also, the plants are exposed to temperatures that are more along the lines of what they'll deal with when we first put them in the ground in the spring. We're a fortunate day today. If you go to your local weather report, it says it's 45 degrees. I might wait till we hit 50. Yesterday, we put out the tomatoes and put them out in a sunny spot. It was about 55. So it was definitely warm enough for the tomatoes. Is 46 warm enough? I wouldn't. But you can if you want. Remember, they're tropicals. They want warmer temperatures. 46 warmer. If you already have them in containers and they're in your house, I'm not going to risk taking them out. If it was 50 and above or 55 and above, which we may get to today, I may set them outside for a couple hours. As long as the temperatures were warm enough, and we weren't suffering from tremendously strong wind, I would take them outside and let's start acclimating them to the cooler temperatures. You'll have a stronger tomato when you go to plant it. You'll see in a lot of nurseries, especially growers in their greenhouses, will have big fans on to keep the airflow. That has a whole host of uses, but some of it is that keeping the wind and the breeze moving within the greenhouse helps strengthen the plants, and it will help them produce stronger roots. That's one of the arguments about not staking a tree. If you stake that tree so it cannot move, you're missing out on the opportunity for the tree to develop a decent root set, stronger roots, really establish them deep in the soil. So is it a good idea to take out your plants that you started inside on a day that there's no sun? Are you wasting your time? You are not. There are still benefits to be derived from the weather, from the breeze, and even spotty sun that may show up. You are acclimating the plants to when they're finally going to get to be in the ground. So, cloudy day doesn't mean no plants outside. Temperature is probably a more important factor. And right now, I think it's too cool for tomatoes. But if we were 10 degrees warmer, you betcha mine would be out there even if there was no sun. I'd have them soaking up what they could, enjoying the breeze, blowing off the diseases that can accumulate. And I'd wind up with a great set of tomatoes to grow for this spring. Speaking of the tomatoes, we had to pot up half of them. They got so big for their containers, we had to move them to a larger container so they could fully grow. I still have some that haven't matured as much. They're probably going to get potted up today, and we're going to make sure that everything is growing well and take care of it. And I got about a month. In a great scenario, I'd be able to put these plants in the ground at the end of February. They should definitely be large enough. I know a lot of people are going, what are you talking about? You should have tomatoes in the ground by Valentine's Day. Yeah, you know, you should have tomatoes in the ground when the weather's ready. You want to put them in that early? That's totally up to you. Just remember, you're going to have extra work keeping them covered and warm. They don't want to be below 45, and 50 would be better. And it's a lot easier to keep them at 50 or above, still in the container, still in the house, than it is to plant them super early. And then I got to run out there and cover them and do all these tricks and things like that to make sure that they don't get cold, that they don't get shocked or stunted from a blast of cold temperature that would greatly impact the production capability of that particular tomato. I got a goal of, you know, several, I would love to see 200 pounds of tomatoes from my tomatoes. That's not a reasonable request. And I'm going to take the steps I can to get that many tomatoes. And one of them is, sorry, it doesn't have to go out in cold weather the first minute that it's capable. Drives people crazy, doesn't it? We just got to get those tomatoes out there because our environment here is so weird to allow tomatoes to be really, really productive. I understand the battle. Sometimes I don't want to participate in it. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. We're up against a break. You can give me a call. The number is 512-836-0590. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. You know, I got a text message here that reminds me of something. A lot of times at Christmas, we have a host of plants that are Christmas specific. Christmas cactus, poinsettias. We might not see these plants except for a relatively small period of time during the year. Part of that is the plant themselves. You know, a poinsettia needs to be in the dark, and I mean like nearly zero light, for 6 weeks or more for it to get the colors it's supposed to on it. Christmas cactus, specific care to get it to force a bloom at the right time of the year. Then after that, it's just kind of like that's a unique looking plant. Do you get to put any of these in the ground? Not really. They'll do well in a container, but do you have the ability for the poinsettias, for example, to put them someplace where they get the environment they need, they get the water they need, they get the light they need, which in some terms, if you want to make the plant color, that means zero light for a certain period of time. There were a discussion of poinsettias and how delicate they are with light that some greenhouses would literally put black curtains around the inside of the greenhouse so that somebody driving by in a car, that the car headlights wouldn't affect the poinsettias. And then all light was controlled inside of the greenhouse. If you want to do that, good luck. I mean, like I said, you can grow any plant on the planet, anywhere on the planet, so long as you give it the conditions it needs. The question becomes, is giving this plant, which is cheap, sorry, you can get a new one next Christmas really easily, which is an inexpensive plant, do you really want to go to this amount of trouble when you could just purchase a new one in November when they show up? Up to you. But there is some very specific things you need to do to get it to produce color. Let's go to the phone. This is Dave. Good morning, Dave. What can I help you with?
Good morning, Jeff. I love the program. I started a variety of seeds on the 5th of January, and the tomatoes sprouted almost immediately, within a week. My question is, they come up with that long, skinny, pointy leaf, and then after they start getting their what would look like a tomato leaf, do I snip off the original sprout leaves or just let them go?
Let them go. Those first leaves are the ones you'll get with germination. Those first leaves, they're still taking in sunlight and providing food to the plant. And then you're going to get what we would call the true leaf, the tomato-shaped leaf. You don't have to go to any extra trouble. If you watch, and I'll make you bet it takes less than 14 days, that those two original leaves, the very first ones that showed up, will probably fall off on their own in the next 2 weeks. And your true leaves will be growing like crazy and getting bigger. It's no maintenance required time of the plant. So leave them be. If you don't like the looks of it, feel free, but it's really not worth the trouble. They'll disappear on their own in no time at all.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Dave. Yeah, it's we talk about this a lot. True leaves versus the germination leaves, the first ones to sprout. True leaves are ones where that is actually the plant and the leaf is serving its purpose of using photosynthesis to take carbon dioxide and water and sunlight and turn it into oxygen, water, and carbohydrates, food. That's photosynthesis. Those two little leaves can do that, just nowhere near the level that a true leaf can. The two little leaves are kind of an assistant to let the seed push its way through the soil. They make a great indicator for you. You know that it's plant. You know what you need to do with it. So do you need to remove them once you get real ones? Nah, they'll fall off on their own. They are not detrimental. They're not taking anything away from the plant as it grows. And they're still beneficial because if they're a healthy leaf, one of the things leaves do is make food. So you just simply have a couple of small but still beneficial leaves on the plant trying to make up and store more carbohydrates for it. And the more carbs it gets, the more real leaves it can produce, the more real leaves it can produce, the more food it can make. And we start the process of simply waiting for those yellow flowers to set fruit, and then we get tomatoes to enjoy. So this happens on lots of plants. Probably almost every seed plant, leeks, onions, alliums, they are not. They're a slightly different evolution of the plant seed, so we really don't see that on those. But pretty much everything else, squashes to cucumbers to beets to, oh gosh, just about everything, produces that first set of leaves that there's much a flag to tell you where they're at as they are anything else. Don't add extra labor to your garden. It's not really worth it. Let's go to the phone. This is Dee. Good morning, Dee. What can I help you with?
Good morning. I would like to find out if you know any place I can buy a Mustang plant or cuttings.
Wow, that's a really good question. I believe you can during the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center plant sale. That'll probably be going on in March, I think. I don't know what their date is for it. Number two, a walk in the woods may get you what you're looking for because the Mustang will appear just about anywhere. Here's the problem. My understanding is that Mustang grapes have a male and a female plant. So if you get the plant that doesn't produce the grape, and that was not your intent, you really wanted the grape, that's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
But you should be able to call the local nurseries and tell them, do they have a grower? Do they have a place to suggest it? Not all of them will carry it, which is somewhat disappointing because it's such a strong grape. And you can still make jelly, wine, whatever out of it. But they will try to accommodate you. And you might want to check with somebody who lives near you. You're up in Sherman, right?
Yes.
There is a nursery in the Fort Worth area called North End. Great place.
North End?
Yes. North End. End. Instead of North Face, it's North End.
Okay.
Give them a call. They're real big on natives and, organic practices and really providing good plants. You may want to check with them. And I'm sorry, that could be 50 miles, 100 miles away from where you live. I understand that. But give them a call. And I think they can help you out. That's one of the few nurseries I know of up north, that far north especially. They are highly regarded, and they may have what you're looking for. Yeah, folks, Mustang grapes are super-duper tough, and there's nothing you can't make with a Mustang grape that you can make with a fancy grape. It's just a different plant. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. We're coming up at the bottom of the hour. We need to break for the news. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, everybody. I got a question, and it makes sense about all those Christmas plants. We purchase various flowering plants that we only see at Christmas. Everything from amaryllis bulbs to poinsettias, Christmas cactus, all of these plants. Now, I fully get from the gardener's perspective that we want to do everything we can to save plants. But diminished returns, folks. it's entirely possible to work really hard and follow some, not all of them unreasonable, but some pretty dependent rules, and get every one of these plants to come back so that it puts on that beautiful bloom that you expect Christmas next year. I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that. There really isn't, if you want to make an attempt. It's like the folks who will plant a specimen plant, something that normally wouldn't do particularly well in the ground here, but can be managed in a container, like blueberries. They will have a tough time in our soil, unless, of course, you live in Far East acidic Texas. But, you know, they can do surprisingly well in a container with a whole lot less work on your part and produce a quality blueberry. That would be my example of a specimen plant. I've actually done that, a container specific for blueberries. So it's totally up to you. It is some of the adventure of gardening. You're going to try things that may or may not work. You're going to try things where you're like, I never heard of this one before. That's all right. But there's also the ability to recognize that, you know, that poinsettia should go in the compost pile. I'll buy a new one. Over a 12-month period, the amount of labor to keep that poinsettia going is going to be much more expensive than just going out and buying a new one already in color and enjoying it for the month of Christmas. Same with the Christmas cactus. A lot of people with their, holy cow, I can't remember the name of them. The flowering plant that disappears in the summer that's from Plumeria, thank you. The plumerias, with great effort to keep a particular plumeria growing nonstop. Now, my talk about this one, and I try not to make fun of it, because like I said at the Natural Gardener, for years, we had one that weighed 500 pounds, maybe more. We had a huge greenhouse and a forklift and the ability to lift up the plant and move it into that greenhouse where cold weather was never going to be a problem for it. And after we got it moved into that, we just let it grow, and we had like a 15-foot tall plumeria. But at some point it became, do we really want to do this all the time? I mean, it's hard to get it in there. It can be dangerous moving around a forklift when people are on the property. No. Plumerias are plants that you could almost consider an annual. I mean, they're easy to find. People who have plumeria tend to have plumeria starts all the time. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm just simply saying that, are your efforts really truly worth it? They may be to you, and that's great. Nothing better than a specimen plant. My particular specimen plant is blood orange that I have. It's actually produced, and I don't have to do tremendous care to it. But if I lost it, it wouldn't be all that brokenhearted. Like I said, you can't be a good gardener if you can't kill a plant. And sometimes that, oops, I killed the plant, is neglect because it's just not worth the return to try to keep a plant that's not doing well doing well. We need to be able to go through the garden and without hesitation go, that plant's sick, it's never going to get better. Pull it out of the ground, put it in the compost. Or cut off the branch that you're trying to get to form that you hope would do better, or any of these things. That's what it's going to mean to be a gardener. You got to be able to kill a plant. If you can't kill a plant, you can't be a good gardener. Now, I know there are a lot of you out there right now going, I must be an outstanding gardener because I kill plants all the time. That's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Each time is a lesson learned. Now, granted, sometimes you don't want to learn that lesson. Sometimes you don't want to learn that lesson, but it happens. If you are starting seeds, if you have compost pile, a lot of times what you can see on the surface of the soil will be this white, fuzzy, webby material. That is a fungus. That is not by default a horrid thing. We have to have funguses to break down certain plants, certain materials. So the appearance of a fungus on the soil, on your compost pile, those are not by default bad things. When you have it in your compost pile, it means the fungus is working like crazy to break down your compost, and that's exactly what you want. When you have it on top of a seed start tray, there's a couple of things that could be going on here. It could be you're keeping the soil too wet in the seed tray. Wet to dry cycles, folks, wet to dry cycles. Soak it well, let it drain for a while before you water again. A seed start tray probably should not be watered every single day. Number two, if you're uncomfortable with that fungus, or it is one that, yeah, maybe we should get rid of, grab the garlic powder, not garlic salt. Grab the garlic powder out of your spice cabinet. You can dust, really light layer, folks. You can dust the garlic powder over the seed start tray surface. Garlic is a proven antifungal, and as such, may help get rid of that white that you see on the seed tray. If it's a bad type of fungus, great, you can get rid of it that way. If it's a good type of fungus, it's okay to not take advantage of it being a good fungus, because sometimes it takes a lot to figure out which kind it is. It's not a simple, oh, it looks like that, it must be this. Doesn't always work that way. So try garlic powder. And I truly mean a light dusting, flouring a cake pan type dusting. Very little is needed. Spread it evenly over the surface of your seed start tray. And be careful with the water. Water when they need it. Not every day. Not every day. And the seed should not stay constantly wet. It's okay for you to water well and let that little bit of the top surface completely dry before you water again. You don't want to keep the plant in a swamp nonstop. It's not going to be beneficial for you or the plant. But the garlic powder is as organic as you can get. There is a product called Monterey Complete Disease Control. You hear me mention it a lot. And it is an effective biological control against fungus. And you can make up some and add it to the water of watering the plant, and it will help get rid of that white layer across the top of your seed start tray and will prevent some of the funguses that cause things like damping off. But surprisingly, plain garlic powder, not garlic salt, garlic powder, can give you pretty similar results and keep those plants happy and healthy. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. We're up against a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Should be a wonderful day today. I know it's not going to be, 78 degrees and sunny all day long. But it shouldn't be wet, and it shouldn't be super cold or super windy. And then the great thing about it is that, if you have starts, whether it's a 15-gallon tree or a 4-inch flowering pot, there's an advantage there is an advantage to overcast weather. When you take a plant and you, whether you started it from seed or you dug it out of the ground and put it in a container, that plant's been stressed. So if I were to pull it out of its pot and put it into the ground, and it's an all-day Sunday, well, that just puts more effort on the plant. You're going to see that it's going to have to take up more water because of the sun, especially when it's windy. It depends on what the soil is like. But on an overcast day, there's a whole lot less stress on that plant, a lot less stress. And planting when it's overcast in a day like today gives the plant 24 hours or more to kind of go, oh, wow, my roots are in a new place here. Let's see, do I have water? Do I have food? Do I have what I need to survive? And you will see that the plant seems to suffer less transplant shock. This is something that occurs with pretty much any plant that you take out of the ground and put somewhere else. You're breaking roots on the plant. And as you break those roots, they got to be restored, obviously. And the plant has to spend energy to put on the new roots that it lost until it can get back to the balance where the amount of roots and the amount of top growth are pretty much equal. That's when the plant's really happy and healthy. The more roots you have, the more top growth you can have, which means more tomatoes, which means denser turf grass, which means a tree that can expand out further than you expected and give you that beautiful canopy. So if you're out and about today, today is a nice day to put in plants. Head to your local nursery, see if they got a sale. See if they've got in that plant you've been waiting for. And if they do, this is a great combination to go and get it planted today, because you'll get a day, maybe two, because we're expecting overcast and rain tomorrow. Great combination. Temperatures aren't too cold. There's pretty much no breeze. It's not too hot. It's not this overwhelming sunshine that's going to burn out the plant or burn you out. And we have a chance of rain tomorrow. Hey, sounds like a day to go and take a drive to your favorite local independent nursery and see what they brought in on stock. Who knows? Maybe you found something that you didn't expect or something you've been looking for. You know, many of the growers are still battling trying to recover from what happened last February. And some of the plants that we would normally see in circulation from growers, they lost so much stuff, they could only focus on certain plants that would let them rebuild their stock fast enough. Other plants may take a while before they show up. I know, we're almost a year since that disaster. Well, you know, plants grow slow. So, good opportunity to go walk through the gardens at your local independent nursery, see what's in stock, see what they may have to replace things that you've lost. And today would be a great day to take it home and plant it. It'd be a really good day, actually. And then tomorrow, as the rain falls, you're going to watch this plant be so grateful, set its roots, and away you go. You're going to have a new feature to your landscape. Now, remember, the minute you put a plant in the ground, you've changed your landscape. And we still need to observe that, wow, I planted that tree 10 years ago, and now all the plants that I had underneath it, they don't work because they don't get any sun. When I planted them, the tree was tiny and it was plenty of sun and everybody was happy. Your landscape changes with every day. So maybe you walk around and determine, wow, you know, this plant really hasn't done well here. It did when we first planted it. Looked good. Grew well. But now it's under a tree and it's a full sun plant. And you have two options. You can move it. And depending on the value of the plant to you, its health, how much you're attached to it, that's always a good solution to give it a new location. But it's also all right to decide, you know, I don't want to bother with this plant anymore. I'm going to remove it because it's not doing particularly well. And I have a different plant that I want to put in there. One that would be perfect for the amount of sun now because of the other plants have grown up around it. And it's okay to take out a plant. The one that always makes people kind of raise their eyebrows is it's also okay to cut down a tree. Yeah, I did say that. Trees have tremendous value in our landscape, but they shouldn't have an overriding dominance that, well, that's a tree, I can never remove it. No, that's not true. You can always remove a tree. There would be reasons to remove a tree. And some of those reasons have nothing to do with the health of the tree. Maybe now that tree grew up and it's blocking your view. It's growing too close to a foundation. Those of you with septic systems, wow, those roots ran out and are going to affect my septic field. All of these are great reasons to remove a tree. But you can also simply remove the tree because you just were not a big fan of it. So today's a good day. Go to your local nursery. Wander around. It's cool without being cold. It's bright without being overwhelmingly sunny and hot. And many of the nurseries are getting from the growers great selection and finally catching up on plants that, well, they just didn't have any for a while. So now you can go and look and then bring that plant home and decide where you're going to put it. Is it replacing something? Is it a new plant? Whatever you do, be careful. Many a back porch are completely covered with containers full of plants that may not see the ground for a very, very long time. Remember, the plant can be kept in the container until you're ready to plant it, but the sooner you can get it in the ground, the faster it will establish itself, the healthier it will be, and the more likely it will be able to manage the heat of summer. Yeah, I know. I think if I were to go and look, I think this is the first time in a very long time that I don't have a plant in a black plastic pot nursery container on my back porch. I'm not sure how that happened. I think it's because we moved to containers more than in the ground. And because we still haven't picked the tree that we want to put where we cut several down. So go check out your nurseries today. It's perfect weather for it. And it's perfect weather to plant anything that you would choose. Tomorrow, we're hoping to get some rain. We could really use it. We're edging into that drought category. And that is something we'd like to avoid. We may not be able to. According to the weather, we probably have more dryness coming, more warm temperatures. So prepare for them. Get your mulch in place. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. It's a beautiful Sunday. It's a great day to be in the garden. And I hope you get an opportunity to go out and enjoy. I will talk to you all next Saturday at 9. And hang on. Cheryl's up next and she's going to have that discussion with you about the natives and their particular abilities to add such beauty to our landscape. I'll talk to you next week.